Some of it you gon' like, some of it you ain't. Tired of hearing fools complaining in barber chairs and beauty shops.
This is Truth Brothers Radio.
That's more like it.
If you're not listening to the Truth Brothers, then the truth ain't in you.
Truth Brothers Radio. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys know you can hit us up at our email at wewanttruth@att.net. Truth is spelled T-R-U-F.
And I am in the chat room right now for all your questions and comments on tonight's topic, which is going to get really real.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
I just happened to take a couple of seconds and go back over the manifesto, and whew.
Yeah.
This is heavy.
Yeah, and before we jump into that, let's introduce our special guest. You guys remember him from our Trayvon Martin episode. He was the police officer who broke it down so real that people couldn't believe that he was actually a police officer saying this. But he is retired police officer Theo Brooks. Everybody, let's give him a big round of applause. How you doing, brother?
What's going on, Ray, Candace, and Devon? It's good to be back.
Hey, Theo.
What's going on,
good
bro?
Good to have you right. With us. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. So we're talking about Officer Nightstick, that bad cop who all people always seem to have a story of running into that guy that just got the attitude that's just not right, don't be interested in helping somebody, and always just seems to wreck your day. So,
yeah.
Again, we want to hear from everybody else out there. I know you guys got an Officer Nightstick story from when you were driving, when you were young, or you seen something happen to a family member, friend, whatever. We want to hear you guys' stories tonight.
Absolutely, I do too.
So yeah, you know, real quick, I'm gonna ask you real quick, what is your thoughts on this story that's developing out here in LA with this Christopher Donner?
Well, Ray, one thing that I find it very interesting, as I've been trying to follow it myself, is that an officer who is familiar with administrative procedures is that, if I'm wrong, you know, someone correct me, but I believe that this guy was fired for, if I'm not mistaken, he told on another officer who was committing, was actually aggressive or was violating another citizen's right, and somehow he was fired. Now, I never known that to happen, but I'm going to tell you, they do a whole lot of things different out there on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, you know, and LAPD doesn't have the greatest reputation, as we know,
right.
But for this guy to be fired, I mean, I think that's, you know, if he worked hard the same way I know that when I decided I wanted to become a police officer, that was a 3-year process. And for all of it to be taken away suddenly, and you know, by, I believe that was the captain's daughter that that he shot, you know, it's clearly displays that this guy has a lot of anger, and it's something that, as I was listening to you all earlier, mostly when they're at that stage, it's a lot that they know that they probably don't want the public to know about.
Right. So let me ask you this real quick. Do you think that $1 million bounty on this guy, do you think that that's kind of justified, or do you think that that might be like too much?
Well, I think it tells a couple things. One is that this guy, apparently his skills is so good, that means that they can't catch up with him, that they're dependent on the public in order to catch up with him.
That's exactly
right.
What I said.
Yeah,
that's it.
This
it's like,
guy,
it's almost like he just completely fell off the grid altogether. I mean,
right.
But well,
he says that in his manifesto, too. He says, you know, I know everything that you're going to do, and every place you think I'm going to be, I'm not going to be. And I heard they released the drones out into the desert trying to find him yesterday.
I think he's long gone. I'm going to tell you what he did that was the smoothest thing. When he drove his car up to that where it was snowing, and it started to snow, and he burnt his truck. That all tracks where he walked were covered, so there was no way they can find him. So there's no telling where he is at this time.
Okay.
You know, and so that's why they threw that $1 million out, because basically, in so many words, they're saying, "I can't find him. Can you please help me?"
Okay.
I
maybe it's me because I'm just conspiratorial to begin with, but it just seems to me that they threw it out there because he said because in his manifesto he dropped names like it was nothing and said he got plenty more, and it just seemed like they might want to just shut him up because I think if they catch up to him they ain't gonna take him alive.
Mm-mm.
Well, I tell you when someone's fired for reporting what another officer does. That goes to show you, well, in my opinion, almost, you know, I agree with you, Ray. It's kind of like still telling that the LAPD is not quite the department that they're supposed to be after the old Jason and Rodney King. You know, they still have some holes that they need to fix. And this guy, a black guy at that, who served this country, you know, apparently. They're showing that he knows something. Not only he knows something, but then he carried out his actions. And, you know, that's kind of embarrassing because, you know, who has heard of an officer being fired because he told on another officer what they did wrong?
Right.
I've never heard of that. I've heard the fix is in, which wouldn't surprise me, and something like that. But it was obvious that the fix was in to get rid of this guy. He probably what they call broke the code of blue out there.
That's what he says in his manifesto. That's exactly what he says in his manifesto. Is that's why they got him, because they say they told him that he broke the code of blue. RN Hot Topics said that they just reopened the investigation of his claims of corruption. So
of course,
they're doing that to kind of draw him out.
Yeah, exactly. They say, look, we'll work with you. Now I'm letting you know
exactly.
So, nah,
it's too late. They damaged the man's career.
Right.
He will never be able to work as a law enforcement ever, at least in the state of California, but, you know, anywhere in the United States when an officer is fired, unless it's a small town or a department that sees, you know, the same thing you and I see, and the commissioner say, hey, you know what, this guy was trying to do the right thing. That's that, you know, going on a mole in the LAPD, then, this guy's career.
Yeah, but that won't happen either because, you know, he killed three people already.
Right.
He shot the chick, I think the chick that did the beating, and then I think he got two other cops.
But then again, like I was saying, it wouldn't even matter anyway because, I mean, if we're going to be honest here, he's a dead man anyway it goes.
Yeah.
LA has messed up too. They shot up a car that looked similar to the car he was driving.
Sure did.
So they need to answer, to those two innocent people.
That happened
that
today.
Killed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying.
You're going to raise the award money now that you made a mistake, because if you notice, they quieted that quite a bit, what they did, but they were in the wrong. That was the wrong vehicle that they shot up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two dead people that they killed. But they're going to try to pin it on this man either way it go.
Yeah, they're going to put it on him, saying he caused the panic. Yep.
Right, exactly.
818-514-1202. Come on, we want to hear you guys' stories. Or if you got any comments about what's going on right now with this guy, come on out and say it. Because, you know, it reminds me the way the press is being so cooperative, the media is being so cooperative with keeping this thing under wraps and only saying what the authorities want to say. To me, if I was a reporter, I'd be trying to find him, because to me that would be the scoop of the year, I would think. But
his story reminds
me of do you remember Serpico?
Serpico. It rings a bell.
Yeah, this was a New York police officer who refused to take bribes in the 70s, and his life was on the line because the cops felt, his fellow officers felt like they couldn't trust him because he refused to take a bribe. And his life was constantly on the line. They made a movie with Al Pacino about this dude back in the 70s, a big movie called Serpico.
Bingo, yeah, exactly. Right. And the East Coast has their, you know, their way. I think each region, you'll see that each region has their way of how they handle their departments, you know, and how they do their way of policing. Just like Chicago,
right.
You have I call him Brick City, their new superintendent, when he was out there with Corey in New York. I mean, even his style of policing, he's trying to bring it to Chicago, but every region has their own form of internal affairs and how they handle their cops when it comes to policing their own police.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, one question, one thing I know I'm not familiar with is how LAPD polices their own police. And I can be honest, in this situation, I've never heard it. And actually, I mean, even if you're a person that understands the 10 codes, when you're sitting there looking at TV, and if you ever look at cops, you notice all of us, no matter where you are in the United States, even the 10 code is always different. Even here in Chicago, you know, the codes we use, say, one code in the suburbs mean a wanted person, compared to in Chicago, one code, when they answer it, it means a one-man unit. So every police department is always different. And one thing for sure is that when it comes to talking about officers who are on the bad, if you don't have a good department, and actually our suburban departments in Chicago, when a person files a complaint, it goes to the chief. Now, every department I work for has its own internal affairs division, so that means that there was an independent person investigating your complaint. But then when you have someone that's not independent, a lot of your loose cops continue to stay loose, and they sit there and protect each other until, you know, you start seeing things on a videotape, such as the insert that you had played a little bit before we came on, where, you know, residents finally had that video camera to capture the true color of that department.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing for sure is that LAPD, and not to bash those guys, but, you know, think about it, that, you know, the Rodney King and all these other incidents has played out nationwide with them, you know, and how can they take that back, you know, and they have not, you know, I don't know what measures have they taken to even try to make it where a citizen or when these situations come about, that they can suppress it before it gets out of control, because it eventually something got out of control to make this guy, who was apparently what you would consider a good cop, very angry.
Yeah, you know, something that he was saying in his manifesto is, you know, with the Rodney King beating and all the federal eyes on top of them, they had a dissent decree on them. And I guess the dissent decree was a number of things that they had to do to get the get trust, to reinstore trust with the people down there, and to eliminate corruption. And basically what he was saying is the dissent decree didn't work at all. He said all of those people who worked with the cops that beat up Rodney King, who worked with the people at the O.J. Simpson, they all got promoted, and they're all your boss.
Yep.
They're all in charge. And he's saying it's business as usual. And that's what he was saying. And he said he waited till he went through the whole procedure of what he needed to do before the final judgment came down, and he was relieved of duty to see if he could get justice. And once he exhausted all of his options through the system, that's when he say snap.
Right. And you know, something else that when you mention about the same people being in charge, and this is when we go back to telling our people about voting, when you put the same people in the office, or the same people trying to sugarcoat us whatever community, whether you're African American, Hispanic, you of the minorities, when they come and ask for our vote, we need to understand that if that's the city or town where police corruption is at, we have to understand, is that person going to make the change? Because really, when he gave that directive, the mayor of that city, of L.A., he's in charge of appointing commissioners and so forth and making sure that those things, the changes come about. Because, I mean, look at look what happened with Cory Booker in New York. Now, apparently, you know, the commissioner or our chief, our superintendent now, wasn't working well in New York. But look what happens when you have somebody who's in charge and when they challenge a commissioner for not doing his job or the officers not doing their job. Mm-hmm. That's why it's important to make sure that the person ahead, it all trickles down. It's a trickle-down effect. Because if you got a politician that's crooked or a politician who's in on a take, he's going to play PR to cover up the town and just sacrifice the people on what's going on so he can keep his pockets fat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the shameful part about it, that it goes all the way up to the person that comes to your door and asks them for that vote. Because if the person who's the mayor, whoever they are, the mayor or the supervisor of the community, even if it's the sheriff of a community who doesn't have a municipality, if they do not make those changes within that department, it's the same people being shuffled around to take care of their buddies and same program. And if I'm not mistaken, it might have been here on the local news where police officers being off 2-3 years. I think WGN broadcasting it, 2-3 years with pay for corruption in Chicago. Yeah.
There you go. Now, listen, look here. You're hearing it exactly from a former police officer. He giving it to you guys real. I want you guys to call in, hit him with some questions, tell your stories out there. When we get back, we're going to jump into everybody's encounters and stories when we come back from this message. True Brothers Radio.
Coolest nigga, what?
Truth Brothers Radio.
I'm fearless, now hear this, I'm earless, and I'm peerless. That means I'm eyeless, which means I'm tearless, which means my iris resides where my ears is, which means I'm blinded, but I'ma find it. I can feel its nearness, but I'm a beer, so I don't come near like a chicken or a deer. But I remember I'm not a listener or a seer, so my windshield smear. Here you steer, I really shouldn't be behind this, clearly cause my blindness.
Truth Brothers Radio.
If you join the army, you'll get an education unlike any other. Every single day, people will try and kill you. That'll teach you lessons you'll never learn in school. Improvised explosive devices, snipers, suicide bombers. That's why there's never been a better time to enlist. In the Navy. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
While them poor grunts are eating sand in 130-degree heat, we're catching cool breezes on the big ships, learning mad skills, and getting some.
Oh.
That's right. Navy's co-ed, baby. Our lady sailors bathe every day in co-ed showers. I ain't lying, pal. Out here with the big guns, we can practically guarantee you won't die unless you party too hard. Call your Navy recruiter today. We'll pay for college, and it won't cost you an arm and a leg. Navy. Because joining the Army is just stupid.
Truth Brothers Radio.
If you're gonna survive any longer,
Brothers, True Brothers Radio, and we're back in the second hour discussing tonight police brutality, and we're currently discussing the situation with Christopher Dorner, the gentleman who is under a manhunt right now in the city of L.A. and throughout the United States. We're speaking with Theo Brooks. So, Theo, back to your point of this whole situation.
With Christopher, that the one thing that I want people to understand is that what he did, I'm definitely not going to sit here and say when it comes to killing that that's something that we should condone. But what we should, one point that I want everybody that actually wants to see and understand is that there's some anger there. Someone who takes time out, not everybody can be a police officer. And one thing I have respect is a United States soldier, and that's what this guy was. He was a naval reserve.
Navy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
He served his country, and he was doing, it just seems he was doing all the right things. But it was something there that apparently he had to make a point. He had to make this point. And whatever point he was trying to make, he made it. Now, they're going to say this man is armed and dangerous. They're going to put $1 million over his head. That's because it's obvious that he knows the details, and usually someone like that who's been in that department, I don't know how many years of service he had within that department, but he knows something of that operation. And the embarrassment of, here's a guy who probably they knew this was coming but didn't do anything about it, or better yet, they should have never fired him.
Mm-hmm.
And to hurry up, and when you put a bounty like that, that's pretty much saying a whole lot that they can't find them, they can't do their job of searching for them. Now, don't get me wrong, when you got the FBI involved, they're going to find you.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, this guy has been on the move. He's been on the move. And if you know anything about law enforcement and military, you can look and tell that the moves that he has made as far as getting away, he's done it. He's not doing anything like, what was that football player, Ray Carew?
Mm-hmm.
You go sit there and shoot somebody and then, you drive a couple hundred miles and go hide in your trunk. This guy's not doing that.
Yeah, no,
you know,
this is a professional soldier, and he knows how to get off of the grid. And that's what he's done.
Right.
He's gotten completely off of the grid. He knows about your streetlight cameras, your ATM cameras. He knows about all of that stuff. But I want to get off him for a minute and get on just some some of these cops in general and what to do when you're confronted with like a cop that's not so nice or just flat out bad. I remember when I was younger, man, I had got my first new car, and boy, I was 19, man. I thought I was doing it big, man. In the town that I lived in, there was a cop, man. He pulled me over damn near every day for a month about this car, just because he didn't like the fact of seeing a young black male in a brand new car, and he had serious beef. So after a while, you know, being a kid, I got frustrated and started fronting the dude, and got a nice billy club right to the side of my head for it too.
Right, and you know what? That's not justified, Ray. One thing that I would have to say is that in all my years, 15 years, I've never gotten to any point that I felt that I had to hit a citizen at any time, you know, especially at that, you know, capacity where, you know, a kid, to me, and I guess I try to figure out, because as you remember, when we had this conversation on the Trayvon Martin case, when it came to dealing with officers and the generation that's changing here, I don't understand, and I think we're dealing with two elements. We're dealing with a generation of officers who are glad to see a young brother getting carry. Actually, I'm not even going to say it's a white-black because I've seen white officers come after young white kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked. I was thinking, okay, well, I thought it was only a black-white issue, but no, I think sometimes part of it is racial. I think that has a big key to it, but also I think it's a generation issue because
Sometimes it's just the town wants to have that reputation. I'm going to go ahead and call them out. Man, it's always been known that South Chicago Heights will whoop you up, don't matter who you are. It's been always known that Richland Park, they've whooped up women before. And Frankfort, and there's not a black population in Frankfort, Illinois. And Frankfort is known for whooping you up if you out of line.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Right. There are clearly some departments where you cross the city limits coming out of Chicago. Yeah, absolutely. You have some that would actually make that point that you don't belong in this neck of the woods, that you need to go back where you belong. And some of them also make it a point that, you know what, if you're going to come out in this area and you're going to cause problems, we're going to inconvenience you by letting you sit downstairs in our lockup. And they will do it. It's a presence, you know. And they do that. And some of the towns that you are mentioning, if you come from Chicago and you come with that type of demeanor, you can expect some type of recourse where they're going to send a message that you will not want to come back to their town and do that again, you know. But when you're confronted by an officer, one thing that I recommend to everybody, whenever I have approached a vehicle, I've always approached a vehicle and I've always gave this exact quote, which is whether it's good morning or whether it's the morning or the evening, or I just simply may say, hello, ma'am or sir, may I have your license and proof of insurance, and then we can begin why I stopped you. And in that case, I'm just asking to see who that person is to identify them before I go any further to discuss, because sometimes you can approach a person and they are outright confrontational. If you say, hello, ma'am, I stopped you from speeding, may I have your license and proof of insurance? She's going to argue with you before you get started. And those things, officers, they're supposed to have training for that, to try to understand first that the people who you are stopping, they are human too.
Mm-hmm.
You may have had a bad day, but they may have had a worse day. Their mother may have passed away. They may have lost their job. I've stopped women who, you know, were just upset at something with their boyfriends, and they're crying. And to be honest, I don't wear mascara, but they're crying and driving and not paying attention, and you know, and ma'am, did you know you're okay? And I mean, you know, not every person deserves a ticket. One thing that I tell young men, when you're walking down the street, the purpose of the sidewalk is to walk on. Don't walk in the street. You're giving the police every opportunity to stop you. And you can't get mad if he stops you because there is a law that says you can't walk in the street. And he's going to use his powers to inconvenience your freedom because of this confrontation.
Right.
Yeah, and that's why whenever I spoke at a school or I taught at my DARE classes, I always taught the kids, look, a lot of times, and me, myself, I can tell you I was a police explorer, wanting to be a police, and a Chicago cop stopped me. It was a foggy night. They did a raid in Chicago down the street where I used to live, and I was walking down the street. It was myself, my brother, and a friend, and the Chicago cop If you know Chicago, they have the plainclothes units. We call them Slick Boys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Slick Boys jumped out the car, had me, my brother. I mean, they were grabbing on us. You know, where are you coming from? What are you doing? And actually, one of them told my buddy, you know, I'll pop you with the flashlight. What you gonna do? And, you know, I said, well, you know, officer, I'm an explorer. We're not doing anything wrong. He said, I don't care who you are. And that bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Because here it is. I'm an explorer. And guess what? That next week, we're going to see you in your police station. And what are you going to tell my post commander about your attitude to one of her explorers? And those are the type of officers. Now, I will say this. Our demeanors. When you do not, we didn't escalate anything. We just, I said, hey, my brother's a police explorer. I'm a police explorer. We're not doing anything wrong. But I guarantee you in the back of his head, he knew that if he put his hands on us or brought us into the station, his captain would question us.
Mm-hmm.
Our community service officer, who she was in charge of us as explorers, she would question him. So no officer wants to be tainted. Unless, you know, if he doesn't have to be. But what it did was it did give us the opportunity to keep on walking where we're going instead of being punched on, being hit, or my buddy getting hit with that flashlight.
Right.
Because if you don't give them a reason, those type of officers, you know, I can tell you, Ray, hundreds of times the community I work, 10 guys used to be on the corner. You pull up, if they've known you long enough, half of them, before you even pulled up and rolled the window down, most of them will say, Brooks, we already know. And they'll disappear.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or better yet, if you're that cool cop, I used to say, hey, man, the Slick Boy's out. You better disappear until about 11 p.m. or something. And they'll disappear. That's the type of officer, and if you're on the level of speaking with our brothers and sisters that way, you're going to get that type of cooperation. But the problem is that what scares me is that when I was getting out of law enforcement, there's a breed that's coming in, and they have that S on their chest, and it makes me nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we got a caller on the line. Let's go ahead and go to the caller. 770, you're on with the Truth Brothers and Theo Brooks. What's your name?
Yeah, you can call me Sarge. I'm a retired Illinois State policeman. I worked in the Cook County, Chicago area.
Hey, how you doing,
and,
sir?
I'm very good. I'm very familiar with what you're speaking of. And first of all, you know, this notion that, you know, black men are getting, you know, involved with the system at a disproportionate rate to other people. I mean, look, there may be wrongdoing on the part of the police. I will concede that. In fact, there is. I'm going to concede that. But the fact that the numbers are disproportionate shouldn't be surprising given the fact that we know one of the most reliable indicators of disproportion is homicide. 48% of black people in the United States are 48% of the homicide victims are black people, and 96% of them are killed by other black people. So that is an example of disproportionate crime being committed in the black community. Why are we so surprised that a disproportionate number of those who compromise homicide offenders, people 18 to 34 years of age, are getting hassled by the police? I mean, why is this so amazing that we can't consider that there might be a disproportionate problem with crime generally in the black community? Because, in fact, there is.
All right. Well, you know what? I can't even argue with you on
right.
that fact.
Yeah,
we've said that on this show before, that, you know, a little message to black people, that if you wouldn't be so quick to kill yourself, your enemy won't be so quick to kill you. You're right. They'll have a harder time trying to attack the black community if we won't be so quick to attack ourselves. So I can't argue with you on that point.
Let me also submit something for your consideration here, sir. Now, this does not mean that police officers are not obligated to follow the rules, the laws on the use of force, and every police officer is taught the use of force continuum. I'm sure your officer there can tell you what that is. The use of force continuum, on what level of force is appropriate for what level of resistance. And every police officer is both legally and morally obligated to follow the proper use of force at all times. You're not supposed to get badge heavy. You're not supposed to impose your idea of law and order and justice. You're supposed to do what the law says. I know it can be difficult because it was hard for me. But I do believe I fulfilled my oath of office, and I did it most of the time. But that didn't mean I had to be nice all the time. I had to be legal, and I had to be proper. Well, I did a lot of background.
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello? Hello? Can you hear my background?
About the iPhone is that if you want to know where your ex-girlfriend is at any moment, there's an app for that. Or if you want to check her personal calendar so you can accidentally run into her and give her a chance to take you back, there's an app for that. And if you want to set up automatic late-night calls so she knows you're always thinking about her, well, there's an app for that. And if you need an attorney with a proven record of fighting restraining orders, there's an app for that. But if the judge can't appreciate your love for her and you're required by state law to move on, there's an app for that. And if you need to buy a car with enough horsepower to drive off a cliff so that she comes to your funeral and gives a eulogy about what a great guy you were and then breaks down and cries as she realizes that no other man will ever make her as happy as you did, and that now she's destined to die a lonely old cat lady because she was too stupid to see what she had when it was right in front of her. Yeah, there's an app for that too. That's the iPhone, solving life's dilemmas, one app at a time.
Sorry about that interference. We had one of our phones go out, but we're back on. And I'm going to put you back on, Sarge 60, because I want you to finish your comment. So you're back on with us, sir.
Thank you, sir. Look, as I was saying, you know, at times, you know, police work is like making sausage. It's ugly. You don't want to see it getting made, but everybody wants to eat it when it's done because everybody wants to have a law and order and peace in their communities. But I'm going to tell you about one thing about, you know, police brutality. People talk about, oh, the brothers who get jacked up and the brothers who get beat up all the time. Well, I'm going to tell you about an example of police brutality that I did witness and that I regret not having done enough of, even though I did make an official complaint about it. Now, I'm an Illinois State policeman, and there was an Illinois State refueling station or maintenance station. Actually, I don't know if you're familiar, but it's 35th and Shields near Comiskey Park. That's where it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I went there to refuel my squad there. And a guy almost ran me into the viaduct as I was going there. You know, car weaving all over the road. I had to take evasive action. He almost ran me in the viaduct, and I turned around to pursue him. He got on the expressway at 35th Street and headed south. I got on the Illinois State Police Emergency Radio Network, say I was in pursuit, car failed to yield, wouldn't stop, and I asked for help from any units that could respond. The city responded. They sent a bunch of cars out there to help me. We got the guy in a rolling roadblock, pull him over sometime out near Riverside, out near I-80. You know, I-80 and Dan Ryan. Well, actually, Bishop Ford Expressway, because that's where we went. We went through the Bishop Ford Expressway. That's where we got him pulled over. These city cops went over to this guy's van, opened the door, ripped him and the seat out of the van, threw him on the shoulder of the expressway. They ripped the seat. I'm saying they ripped the seat out of the van.
Oh, my God.
They threw him on the shoulder of the expressway. They started to kick and stomp this guy. You know what they were saying to him? You don't run from the police, you mother. You know, and they were whacking this guy all the time, batons, fists, feet, everything. And me and my partner, we looked at each other saying, they're going to kill this guy. And we went up to him and said, well, we think they've had enough, officer. We'll take him now. So we were the ones that initialized the pursuit, and we managed to get him away from him and all the beating they're putting on this guy. And he was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, pale-skinned white man. First name was Stanley. His last name was a Polish name, and I couldn't say it. It began with a Z, and we put him in the car. And you know why they've been? Because he ran from the police. You run from the police at 10, it doesn't make it right, but I'm saying that's what happens. And, you know, when people say the only reason police beat somebody is because it's a black man and get the hand, that just ain't true.
No, we didn't. But we didn't say that. We just, matter of fact, before you called, we just gave a whole list of Illinois towns that are known for getting that are known for getting rough with people, and it's not just black people. So we know that. But we're saying
it's everywhere around.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's just the fact of, to me, I think more or less that it's the fact that it does happen. It's not. I mean, you got more, and I don't want to be sound like a racist, but you got more white rebels who don't have the fear. I think a lot of times brothers have a fear of kind of standing up to the police because they know that they're quicker or feel that they're quicker to attack them than they feel that the white person will. And I'm not trying to sound racist, but it's a feeling that they can get away with a little more than what we could.
Right.
And I spent 28 years on the job. You know what? In the aggregate, I'm not talking about every single instance. In the aggregate,
right,
most police officers did their duty under extraordinary provocation, you know, and used force that was entirely appropriate. I was in the aggregate, not in every single instance. Please.
But from the outside looking
I'm talking about, in the most part, most police officers take the oath of their office seriously. And I'm willing
to
do it.
And I'm sure anybody who took that oath does take it seriously. But from the outside looking in, to say that, I mean, a person who does not know what the necessary force is, or a person who does not understand, okay, where is the line, anything can be taken as excessive force, especially considering now that you're in the information age when you have cameras around. And who's to say that these things that have happened that we are seeing now, just because it's on YouTube, on Skype, on all these other video websites, who's to say that this wasn't happening before? Now, it's not taken away from what you're saying about you feeling as if you've used necessary force, nothing extreme, nothing over the top, but it's the fact that it has been done, it's still being done.
Let me give you a perfect example of what happened to me just before I retired, about 2 years before I retired, of what happened to me. And it could have gone either way, and, you know, and you could have had any number of community groups saying something didn't happen. You know, cop just shot an unarmed man. Here's what happened to me. So I know that happened to me personally. A woman, I was going to the Thompson Center downtown. A woman came up to me and said, that guy, he stole my purse. And I said, who is that man? I mean, he pointed out a young man. He said, last week he knocked me down, he took my purse. So I go up to the man, I'm going to make a stop, Terry stop, and ask him a few questions. He ran. So I'm chasing him. I chased him about two blocks. He went down to Cook County building, a parking garage. Went down there. I lost sight of him in the basement. I knew he had to be hiding under the car because I didn't hear any doors slam or anything. I'm looking up under the cars. I see his feet. I pull out Mr. 9mm, and I say, okay, out of the car with your hands up, slowly. He comes out. He's got no weapon. He's got his hands up. He said, man, I ain't did nothing. And he's walking toward me. I'm telling him, stop, don't move, turn around, put your hands in. He's steady walking toward me. I got Mr. 9mm on his chest. He's steady walking toward me. I'm telling him to stop. So I'm making a decision. I see no weapon. He's got no weapon. But he's walking toward me. He's a robbery suspect. What should I do? I elected to put Mr. 9mm back in the holster, snap the Class 3 holster back, lower strap, top strap, and me and him went at it hand to hand.
Okay.
Now, I took him down. I got him under arrest. But when I got him in, I said, look, I'm going to charge you with resistance to a peace officer, battery to a peace officer, attempt, you know, all this other stuff, along with, of course, you know, he had the charge, the robbery charge, the strong-arm robbery charge that I was going to hang him. But I said, I just got to know. I'm not going to charge you with this, but I got to know for my peace of mind. Were you going to try to take my gun away from me? And he admitted, yeah, he was. He said that's the reason he kept, because he was going to try to disarm me because he was a two-time loser. This would be his third time. And you know, in Illinois, three-time felony, you've got a big, long beast, Class X stretch. I forget what it is. Now, I forgot what it was, but he was going up for a long time, third strike.
Oh.
So he was going to just, now, if I had dropped the hammer on him, what do you think some community groups might say? Cops shot an unarmed man.
Okay.
As we all know, if you're trying
to
be disarmed, an attempt
to
disarm
a
peace officer is justification for the use of deadly force.
Okay, what we're saying is, no, the man proposed a threat to you when you told him to stop and he kept charging you. At that point, you're defending yourself because you being a law enforcement person, you're telling somebody to stop. Don't come any closer. And he's admitted he would have did that, which when you were telling the story, I was like, okay, he's in the wrong. You told him to stop. If he would have stopped and then you subdued him, had him in cuffs, and then you did something to him, that's what I mean by successful. And that's what
right.
I received.
Also, Bill, you are still on with us, bro. You are still on, so we want your input. And all we're saying is, of course, cops have a very hard job. Of course, cops walk a very thin line, and public perception is a big part of that. But at the same time, when you're beating when you got a dude on the ground and you're beating him, or you're tasing a dude that's already
point.
On the ground, or you're pepper spraying a bunch of kids whose hands are locked in a protest,
when
that can definitely
somebody,
be perceived as excessive force.
In the back, when you have a kid cuffed in the back of a police car and he shot himself. How does
right.
that happen?
Exactly. But Theo, go ahead and jump in there. And thank you, Sarge 60, for your comments, man. It was definitely appreciated. Thank you for the call. But go ahead, Theo.
Yeah, Sarge made one point as he was, I think every cop has his story that sticks out in the back of his head. I had an incident where I was on a domestic, and the young man was 18 years of age, and he wanted to move or leave his father's house. And my partner and I were standing in the living room, and I noticed the father kept walking from side to side. I told him, hey, Dad, you need to calm down. The guy is 18. He can walk out, you know, if he want to. It's his choice. Well, lo and behold, the guy reaches over, and I see his hand, and then actually it was during the wintertime, and those police officers know that back in the day when we used to wear the old cloth coat with that comes down to your waistline with the zipper where your gun at least comes hang out. Well, mine, unfortunately, I didn't have a level 3 like Sarge. I wore a level 2, which would cock back on my hip. But the guy reaches for the weapon. And, you know, as he reaches for the weapon, my instinct was to punch him. And we're punching, we're fighting, we go over on the couch, cuff them, and so forth. But out of that whole deal, that guy only got two years probation. And he gave a written confession. Yeah, I was going to take Officer Brooks' gun because I was very angry. I was very angry that he was allowing my son to leave the house, and I didn't want nobody to leave the house that night. That was the mindset of that subject. And so that's the use of force. And Sarge, one thing too, Sarge brought up a point. He's talking about the frequency ISBN. We all monitor that. But, yes, you know, I've seen situations where we get on ISBN. And one thing I have to say, state police are very disciplined men. And so when Sarge told the story, I know Sarge will go by the book. But, you know, there are moments where we have Chicago cops that will prove that point. you know, that will pull somebody out the car. And I think that's, you know, I can understand his point on that as far as, you know, whether it's black or white. But just like you said, we, I think we had covered that already to say that there are some that I don't think it's sometimes a race thing. I think it's a generational thing, and then at some point it's a race thing. And I think that we as people need to pay attention exactly to, you know, when we have these encounters, when we speak to the police, understand this, you have your right. And as Sarge was saying, that, you know, every officer knows his boundary. But if an individual is speaking correctly, he didn't break any laws, there's no reason for his car to be searched. If a person is walking down the street minding his own business, he can't be taken in, you know, you can't be stopped and taken to jail for nothing. These are the things that our young men and young kids need to understand when it comes to dealing with law enforcement and confronting, as we go back to the original thing when it comes to this, that Officer Nightstick.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have to be or in no confrontational with an individual. And if I'm correct, every officer can tell you that he only deals with 5% of the public. He doesn't deal, you know, once in a while, he 95% of the other people are good people. I can promise you that.
Mm-hmm.
But you have that 5% he deals with every day, and there are some officers that cannot distinguish when he is dealing with outside that 5%. Kid.
Hey,
go ahead, Candace.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're running out of time here. But I want to throw something out there to you. You brought up a couple of things that reminded me of a situation that I was personally in about 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on I-57. I'm going to go visit a family member. I have my 8-year-old daughter in the car with me at the time. So we're going into the city, and as we're on the expressway, I noticed a state trooper that had someone pulled over. He had just finished with them, and he was merging onto the expressway. Well, I noticed him, you know, no big deal. So I'm driving along, and I'm in the far left-hand lane, traveling northbound. Far left-hand lane. He's in the center lane, and he's about maybe a good 1,000 yards back. So as we're driving along, maybe about a good 3 miles, there's an emergency vehicle, a motorcycle, that's off on the left shoulder. And they had someone pulled over. So I see them there, and I'm trying to merge over to my right to get out of their way. At this time, the state trooper who was behind me 1,000 yards has now sped up, and he is now parallel with me, so I can't move over. And
mm-hmm.
I'm looking at him, and I'm confused as to why he's blocking me in. And so once we finally pass the motorcycle that was on the shoulder, he pulls me over. He pulls me over, and he's rude. He's very rude, African-American man, just, you know, just for the sake of the story. And, you know, he says, you know, do you know why I pulled you over? I said, absolutely not. I said, I don't even know why you wouldn't let me get over when I was trying to, you know, get away from that emergency vehicle. So he takes my information. He goes away. He comes back, and he hands me a citation, two of them, one for speeding. Well, he gave me a warning for the speeding, but the other one, he said I violated Scott's law. Not knowing what Scott's law was, I went home and I researched it, and that's when you know, you strike or you kill either a construction worker or emergency vehicle, you know, an officer or something of that sort. And I said, wait a minute, I didn't do this. I said, he blocked me in. I couldn't get over. So I kind of felt like I was being set up. So anyway, I have an officer friend who I consulted with about it and asked, what should I do because I have to go to court for this. That officer told me, well, maybe you should plead guilty. And I said, wait a minute, I didn't strike anybody. I didn't do this. He says, well, you know, if you plead not guilty, that, you know, that's going to double your fine, and, you know, it could get really ugly. I said, but I didn't do this. But to make a long story short, I ended up going to court, and I stood on my principle. I did not do it. I pled not guilty. But the thing that was bone-chilling to me is when I was in that courtroom and the judge called the case, he looked at the docket and then looked up at me over his glasses when he read the charge, you know, as if this was something serious. And it just horrifies me. It horrified me at that point in time to think that, you know, if I plead guilty, I could possibly go to jail, because that's exactly how I felt. Well, anyway, my case got called up. The officer had to state his case. And I didn't have to say one word because the judge said, well, wait a minute. You're telling me that this happened. Did she hit anybody? Well, no, but she... So he dismissed the case because he gave me the wrong charge.
Good job.
He gave me the wrong charge. So I ended up getting my license back, and it was the whole experience just, it frightened me, because if I would have pled guilty to that,
right,
you know, no
right.
telling what my future could have been, because he wanted to be a jerk. I was prepared to say everything that he did. But it just seems like, you know, some officers do that. They purposely try to trap you or put you in a situation where you're going to want to defend yourself.
Yeah. It's a very fine line. Right. And I know we have 3 minutes, and I'm going to squeeze something in very quickly. Number one, when he was 1,000 yards behind you, I'm going to tell you what he was doing. He was pacing you. So he paced you from behind. That's when he turned around and wrote you that warning ticket. But then at the same time, he did write you the wrong citation when it came to I don't even know why he wrote that. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, it's supposed to be you're supposed to yield. I can't remember exactly the statute because, I mean, all of us do it. If an emergency vehicle on the road or a trooper on the road, we get out the way because we don't want to hit that worker or a trooper.
Sure,
so,
sure.
Yeah. So, but also at the same time, and I think I made a point to this when I spoke to Ray, when he asked me to do this again, number one, because somebody writes you a ticket or asks you to get out your car, doesn't mean, number one, you have to accept it, or, you know, which you did the right thing. You did not accept what he accused you of doing. And you were prepared to state your case, which he would not have been able to articulate that. And I was hoping that's what you were going to tell me, because he would not have been able to articulate that charge he gave you on your ticket. And also at the same time, when a police officer is asking you to step out the car, for what reason is he asking you to do this? Or for some young men, you know, it's good to always be honest to say, yes, I have this or I have that, you know. But most police officers do that too. You know, if you're breaking the law, you're breaking the law. But just understand that sometimes, yeah, it's almost a trap. You know, someone's going to get you. Now, me, I'm going to be honest. If before the bag of weed became a big deal, I felt it was a waste for someone to have a bag or two of weed to waste my time bringing you into the station to book you. It just didn't make sense. But you're right, Candace. What you did was right. I didn't understand. You know, I don't understand why some officers do that. When I got my first ticket, I was 19. The officer wrote me a ticket for everything. I got put over on 87th and Dan Ryan. He wrote me no seatbelt, no sticker, no insurance. He wrote me about 6-7 tickets. But at the end of the day, he dropped, or the state dropped half of them, and I paid a $45 supervision and got a city sticker, and I was done. That was my first and last ticket I would say that I hope I get in my life. You know, but
right.
You know,
well,
but it's all about you know, how, you know, but no matter how ignorant they get, we must remain composed and let the officer show his butt, not you.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks, man. You have been a wonderful guest. We had our little technical trouble. We lost about 4 phone calls because they thought we might have been done for the day. So I think we really need to do a part 2. So I want to thank you, man, for coming on, man. It was really great. We appreciate it. Sarge, thanks for calling in. We're going to do a part 2. So I definitely want you to be on the lookout and come back in with your comments, man. Appreciate it having you on.
Does not make sense. An officer brave enough to stop 2 other officers who are beating an emotionally disturbed young man ended up getting suspended for it, and she's facing firing tomorrow. She says it's worse than just not being a part of the boys' club. It's really because she crossed the line, the blue line. It's hard to listen to a mother, Tara, screaming for police to stop punching her son on their front lawn. She had called to have her emotionally disturbed son, Kyle, taken to the hospital. Pagoda police responded while waiting for the ambulance. Officer Regina Tasca got the call. But it's the 2 backup officers from Ridgefield Park who deliver the beating.
The Ridgefield Park officer automatically charges and takes him down to the ground. Another police officer from Ridgefield Park comes in his car, slides to the scene, just starts punching him in the head.
Kyle never threatened, wasn't violent, didn't have a weapon. Eventually, Officer Tasca was able to pry the punching Ridgefield Park officer off Kyle, as seen in this picture taken by his mom, who later commended Tasca.
I appreciate you protecting him when the officers attacked him. I can't figure out what I would have done without you at the scene.
This was excessive force used against an emotionally disturbed person. This was an unlawful tackle. This was punching.
What happens next is baffling.
He's asking me to turn over my weapon.
Pagoda PD suspended Tasca for stopping the officer's excessive violence. They never questioned those Ridgefield Park officers about the tackle, the punches. Kyle was taken to the hospital, his bruises documented, but no charges were ever filed. Officer Tasca says the real reason why she's being called out on these charges, because she crossed the blue line. She refused to support another officer even when his actions turned violent. The other problem, the Pagoda Police Department is very small, fewer than 20 officers, and here she is a definitive minority.
They've never had a female officer before, and the person only gay female officer.
Despite TASCA's numerous commendations and awards, her 11 years on the job, it can all end this week if a judge decides she should indeed be fired.
That's terminating her. They're destroying her reputation.
That's the sound that I beat.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Are you not entertained?
Truth Brothers Radio. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the second hour of Truth Brothers. I'm Ray.
And I'm Devon.
And we are the Truth Brothers. The number to give us a call is 818-514-1202. That's 818-514-1202.
And as always, you guys know you can hit us up at our email at wewanttruth@att.net. Truth is spelled T-R-U-F.
All right, family, and I'm logged into the chat room now for all your questions and comments on tonight's topic, Officer Nightstick Part 2. Now, we definitely want to hear from you guys tonight, either via chat room, call in to the station, as Ray said, 818-514-1202. Let's hear from you tonight.
There you go.
And, yep. Ray, I'll let you introduce our guest.
Yeah, and coming back for his second week, everybody's favorite officer, Officer Theo Brooks, man. How you doing, man? Let's give him a big round of applause.
That's right.
All right, Ray. Candace, Devon, it was great to be back, especially part two on what I thought was a great conversation last week that I don't think we wanted to end.
Yeah, obviously.
Really?
That's why we had to do part two.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get to rocking and rolling.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you a question, man. From your extensive years as a police officer, can you explain the procedure on when to throw a grenade and what type of grenade you're supposed to throw?
Right. Right. Well, I guess the world has witnessed what they have found to be quite. How could I say? I can't quite find a word, but curious braid to try to get one who has bunkered themselves down into a cabin. Mostly my experience, Ray, has always been known that people, or actually when we do a raid, or the raids I've been on, you throw a percussion grenade, which, you know, pretty much a big bang, you know, the one that you see on cops, the big bang. And, you know, then you would go in. Now, when we seen that on television with the heat grenade, I guess, to try to warm up the house or heat up the house, I didn't understand that concept. I mean, I've never been a SWAT captain, so, you know, maybe someone who's been along that line. I mean, I've never, or the raids I've been on, we have never thrown no type of grenade to that extent that, you know, it will burn someone's house down. And I think if everybody was watching live television, in which I always tell people it's good to have a scanner, I mean, you heard it yourself. Let's burn them down or burn them out. And that was kind of self-explanatory. You just need to listen to the words when people try to explain it. It's almost like Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. You know, he didn't have sex with that woman, but what did he do? He had sex.
Right.
You know, so when they say that we did not mean or we accidentally threw, you know, whatever they were trying to say into the house. You know, I don't think it was, I don't see it as no accident. I think they knew what they're doing. They heard the transmission over there yourself.
There you go. 818-514-1202. Anybody who got any questions for our special guest, feel free to call in and and don't be afraid to put anything you got out there in the air, put it out there. Yeah, I just found the whole thing, like I say, last week when we were talking about the reward, all of that stuff to me was aimed at trying to put pressure on the public and then put pressure on him knowing that they were going to take him out. I mean, if you put a $1 million reward on somebody, you want people out there headhunting. You want people
absolutely
out there looking for any bald-head black guy that they can find and hoping that
right
they get lucky.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, I can tell from experience. I've had a partner who was wounded, and I can tell you when that call goes out and you grabbing your bag from home or if you're on the street and you're looking for those individuals who shot that officer, you know, you're going to do your job.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
by that being a fellow officer, I can understand how that might feel personal, especially if it's somebody you know and that you've worked with for years and you care about. I totally get all of that, and you know, I try to tell people all the time when you've got organized forces like the police, like the military, the camaraderie that builds around those people in that thing is a very serious, strong bond. I mean, I've got friends that I was in the military with. We're still tight to this day, and we haven't seen each other in years. And when we see each other, it's like the bond never went away. It's like we
mm-hmm.
hadn't seen, like we just seen each other yesterday. So I understand all of that. And when people put on that hat to go into that mold, you have to take that stuff seriously. You know, during the L.A. riots, I used to tell people don't understand. When they had called the Marines in there to go ahead and take the city back, people don't understand. Those guys had orders to be locked and loaded. When you're locked and loaded, you're prepared to get down. And it ain't no warning shots, and it ain't no bullhorns telling you to go home. When a force goes in somewhere locked and loaded, they mean business.
Right. And there's no stopping. How could you say they're not going to be complete to whatever task it is that they're trying to meet by any means necessary at some point.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't, you know, when I watched the raid go down on television, I noticed that LAPD said, okay, we have our guys on the way. I went in and told my wife, I said, you know what? It's about to get ugly because it's personal. LAPD
mm-hmm.
is not finished.
Right.
Right.
The county sheriff was there, but no, LAPD wants the head of that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and my question is, isn't that out of their jurisdiction?
Yeah, they were, and what you seen was more of because LAPD want them. It was more like a cooperation type of deal.
Okay.
If we find them, we'll let you know. Or probably, you know, since they had been looking for them for 9 days, you know, LAPD probably say, well, you know what, we can't find them. We're going to go back and follow our leads. You continue your leads, but you know, if you find something, give us a call.
No, yep.
Yeah, and that's what happened, and that's why, you know, you heard that, yeah, they were on their choppers on their way out there, yeah, because they wanted a piece of that action because
mm-hmm.
they were not finished. They were not finished by far. So, they got their man, if you want to say that much, but, you know, you can see what was developing in the works when it came to when they had them cornered. It was just
mm-hmm.
how quick was it going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
That was the key thing. How fast are they going to take him out? Because it was evident that he was not. And then you mean he shot two deputies at that. One of them died on the way to the hospital. Oh, so you know there was more blood in their eyes.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So probably the sheriffs were like, you know, we're not waiting. He just killed one of our boys. And, you know, that's probably what led to their whatever the cabin being burned down, because you know it kind of reminded me. I don't know if you ever watched Saving Private Ryan when they first went on the beach and the Germans were just wiping out American soldiers once they got in the bunker and they threw the flames and they said, let them burn.
Yeah.
For some reason, that was the attitude I believe that they had when it came to him. You know what?
He's right, that he deserved anything he got at that point.
Right, let him burn. And that was the thought that I had. We can't see him. We can't shoot him. Let him burn. You know,
right.
Not to say that that's what they were, you know, not that I'm speaking for them. But, I mean, this is what, you know, they need to understand the perspective of the public that's watching in. Because, as you said, the media will overshadow everything if they run it 24/7. And, you know, even the president said, with a media that's a 24-hour cycle now compared to when we were young kids where you heard it at 7 o'clock in the morning, then you heard it again at 10 o'clock at night. Now, I mean, it's running 24/7. They had this man picture on television so many times through the 9 days, and you know, there was control over the situation by means of the police department and not, you know, the officer. So he didn't have his chance to say what he wanted to say.
Exactly, and the media, and he was calling out to the media, hoping that the media would do some actual reporting, some actual investigative reporting, and none of that happened. He sent something to Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper's secretary opened it up, took a peek at it, and sent it right on the police. I don't believe Anderson Cooper actually even looked at the thing. He was probably told what was in there so he could report it, but he didn't do any. They asked that police chief or whoever it was. They asked him, did you know the guy? And the dude was like, I don't even remember him or whatever. And then they were showing this picture of these two shaking hands at some event. I don't know nothing about it. And one of the cops that he shot, I guess the dude is such a good marksman, he had a pin that this guy gives certain officers where he had put three slugs through it, and that was a nice tight group, so he's very good at what he does.
Right.
And
right.
He was sending a message, and he's trying to tell you that, hey, this dude is bogus, but the media never picked up on it. The media didn't do any research. My question is, either this female cop that started all the trouble, either she kicked this guy in the face or she didn't. And if
he did kick
the guy in the face, to me, that opens up a whole lot of questions to how you took this guy's career when actually what he was reporting was actually true. Everything else after that is I'm not going to say it's inconsequential by no means because he took lives. But to me, that's point one. If he actually was reporting the truth and he crossed the supposed blue line, that opens up the question, where is the backup? Where is the support system for cops who want to tell when they see crooked stuff going on?
And that was going to be my next question.
Yeah, well, you know, just to kind of follow through what you said, Ray, was that I've never seen an officer, well, at least here in this region, get fired for telling on another officer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you may get is that when you go back to work, you're going to have a hell of a time when it comes to when you need backup or, depending on who the guy was or whatever, because believe it or not, there's police politics very heavy. I mean, the politics in the police department is more heavier than probably the workplace or
no doubt.
And so, you know, I just found that shocking that this guy was fired for being honest with someone, you know, with the case with the him letting them know that the officer kicked, you know, that she kicked this guy in the head, in which apparently something must have been wrong. And sometimes, you know, I mean, my approach, if it was something like that, if I've seen an officer kicking, you know, someone, you know, I'll look at it, and, you know, sometimes, you know, hey, you grab that, hey, man, while I'm here, you don't do that. And I mean it. And sometimes, you know, you lay that ground. And I'm sure he was the type that probably laid that same type of ground, but she didn't give a damn because who her father was.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Before we go any further, I want to put something else out there real quick to any of the police officers or law enforcement people that's out there listening to the show tonight. Look, first off, we understand you have a very tough job, and if you really dove into it, you guys should be paid a whole lot more money than you're actually getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the fact that you have such authority and your word means a little more than the actual Joe Public do, because if you say I run the red light and I say I didn't, most likely the judge is going to listen to you that said I ran the red light.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing all of that and knowing that you have the powers to carry a weapon and that people are going to be coming to you for help. Now, we understand that you deal with a lot of scum out there and a lot of bad people, but at the same time, you have a serious responsibility to be as upfront as you can with the public and to treat people as humanely as possible. I understand if you pull me over and I jump out the car and swing on you,
exactly,
I get exactly what I deserve. If you listen to a lot of our terrible truth, when we say that and the cop properly tased so-and-so, we don't say the cop tased him for no reason. If you on bath salts running around naked in someone's house, you asking to get tased.
Absolutely.
It's not worse.
Right. And you know, I just want to throw this, Ray. I mean, you and Candace, you two know my circumstance. I just want the public to understand this, because you're telling the truth, and you guys know me personally, how down to earth I can be. I've always done everything by the book, and then whenever it came to have to become physical with somebody, I always did it by the book and to make it where I can come home. And what people need to understand is that a simple call that I was on that ended my 15-year career was, someone was a mental patient. And the father and the sister and every mother, they all knew this. They didn't give all the information I knew. And when the guy attacked me, it snapped my back, and my disc was torn to the fact that it was leaking, and you guys knew how much I went through pain. I had to have a fusion. I can't never work again because this is a job, and I can tell you it was not worth the pain, but I enjoy helping people. And so,
right.
You know, it's not a game when you see an officer become physical plus one, because his life can end up like mine, where
mm-hmm.
I had to learn how to walk all over again,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's very few like myself that will stand up and try to help a citizen like this should. I mean, like I said, I think I said it 100 times on the show, it's a different breed that's showing up out there. They don't care. They don't know. And then you have our people who don't care, don't know about what the police are thinking, and it causes a clash. And, I mean, it gets to the point where almost like we've seen with the L.A. riot. One don't care about the other, and you wonder when is it going to end until someone actually physically says, like a leader says, hey, this shouldn't happen. But, yeah,
mm-hmm.
it is a tough, tough, tough job to do. It is very tough. And, you know, the circumstance, and believe it or not, the apology when I was in the emergency room of the father coming up to my partner while I was laying there getting ready to go to the x-ray machine to say, hey, tell your partner I'm sorry. I want to tell him that I didn't know, you know, and I didn't tase the guy. I could have, but I didn't. What I did was follow him. I wrestled in high school. I wrestled my butt off to try to get this guy cuffed until backup came. This is a schizophrenic. Who's probably twice the power of me, and I'm yelling for help on my radio, and he snatches my radio off. Now, I almost didn't come because his hand was on my gun. But I want the public to understand that when they come to us, some of them say they don't care, but understand that your brother, your sister may have that same passion to go out and help people, and what it does, it takes understanding. And probably the reason why I have more understanding than some of these other officers is because I was a community service officer and a juvenile officer. Those were my two special, you know, my special, two specialties through my 95% of my career. So I understand, you know, when it comes to that and dealing with the public, it's just, you know, if we, especially tonight, let the public know, how do you handle a situation when you approach a cop? What do you do? Does the system work for you? It absolutely does, because especially with Chicago, when you complain on them, they get a complaint number, and that number does not go away. And believe me, Internal Affairs Chicago will follow up on it, but you have to follow up on that complaint, too, and be sincere.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be just mad and I'm a tail. You know, no, go in there with your facts. If your rights was violated, you go in there with those facts. Because one thing is for sure, Internal Affairs Chicago is going to deal with that officer. They're going to call that officer in. And, you know, I've had people file a complaint because of a ticket. Well, you know, hey, if you're going 30 over the limit and you're late for work and you're just mad because I wrote the ticket but I didn't curse you or yell at you, that's not really a true complaint. You know,
right.
Your complaint belongs in the courtroom to the judge to say that you were not speeding. You know, right is right, wrong is wrong.
Now, something that you said, Leo, struck me. Now, you said your initial position before becoming an officer, you worked for the community. What title was that again?
Community service officer. We organize the block club and go out, and you're supposed to speak with the residents and kind of educate them on police work.
The reason why I asked you that is I'm not big a fan of officers. I'm sorry. I'm just not, just due to personal experiences I've had. But how open-minded you are has to be attributed to you being a community service officer, having an actual interaction with communities and people and mindsets and attitudes. I'm not sure if that's a prerequisite for officers. If not, it should be. Or are there certain ethics classes or behavioral classes officers have to take before...
Before they go to the streets.
Yes, I'm thinking that it's something like that. Just seems like it would be imperative. You're going to be working with the community. You're working with a myriad of different personalities and people and kids and women and men. So it just seems like there needs to be more temperamental guidance before someone who has the authority to, you know, to jeopardize your livelihood, your lifestyle, your freedom, you know, can be put out there on the street. So what are your takes on that?
Well, I will say this much. Before I became a cop, I guess I would always tell my juveniles in high school that the high school I was at as a resource officer, actually the town that I worked at as a youth officer, when I speak at the schools, I tell them, I was a kid too. Also, I was a young black man at that point, too. So I understood, how could you say, I understood both sides. I knew what I wanted to do when I was 16, but I had to be 21 in order to carry a gun. I knew the qualifications. I was only preparing myself for it. But before I got up to that point, a lot of my interactions with police officers were just, some of them were good, some of them were bad. And when I became a police officer, you know, I think a lot of my personality contributed to, most of the residents that I've always dealt with would say, he's a cool guy, he's an understanding guy, but when it came to doing his job, you just don't play with him. I'm stern. I'll fight you back like a bull and put the cuffs on you, get you downstairs and smile and say, hey, man, it's part of the game. It's over with. Now, you know, I deal with the pen. But the fact is that some officers do not, they go for this job and say, I have the power. Some of them forget where they come from. They forget that, you know, the things that they're doing to kids were done to them. And, you know, I don't get it sometimes, you know, even when you're sitting in the patrol room and you're working on your reports and you're listening to some of the things that the guys are saying. And, you know, you're real when you turn around and, you know, you scoot your chip back and turn around and say, you know what, man, I bet you did the same thing to a police officer when you were young. And I noticed, it's some that actually – I noticed, and now that you said it, Candace, there are some who did not forget where they came from. Those usually are the most kinder officers that you run into. I've had guys, they will not write a ticket for loud music because they have loud music and they used to play loud music before
exactly.
they became the police. You know, so why would you pull up and tow a guy's car for loud music, cite him a ticket because it's just your job, but then when you go into the 50-yard line on Friday night, you're still bumping old school music louder than
doing
the kids in the car
thing.
You sold.
All right.
You know?
Doing the
and
same thing.
Yeah, it's just, you know, the hypocrisy is there with some guys. They forget where they came from. I just promised when I did this job that I would do my best to help people as much as possible. I came in under the Clinton grant. So when I came in under the Clinton grant, I knew, you know, for more police on the street, you know, I was blessed that that happened because today you can't even get a job.
Yeah.
But I knew what I was supposed to do. And true enough, man, is there are officers that when they have, I tell you what most departments do, when they talk about the complaint that, you know, the attitudes that you run into, sometimes there are departments that are very, very fed up with some of those officers that you're actually dealing with. They just never get that complaint. You know, the complaint comes, they never come in. You know, and believe me, Chicago keeps track of the complaints of their officers. State police keep track of their officers. Now, it depends, like when we were talking about Frankfurt and some of them other towns, I don't know how they keep track, but you know what? Their towns are small enough that if you want to talk, you know, if you go into their chief, I'm sure their chief will deal with it. A lot of it falls back on us when it comes to making those complaints against officers about their attitude. Because sooner or later,
that's true.
The straw has to break, you know, the straw has to break at some point. You can keep bending and bending, but it's going to break at some point. So
right.
That's true.
You know,
I just think that some people, especially younger people, and I was younger when I had a particular incident, you know, and I'm the type, just like you hear me talking now, calm and cool, I've always been this way. So
yeah, I never heard you yell, Candace, never.
Yeah, I have.
Yes. Well, yes, he has. I can go there. But, you know, because I understand that this is his job, this is what he has to do in certain regards. But I've also had officers pull me over just to get my telephone number. You know, put the lights on, you know, just frivolous stuff.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, it's hard to decipher nowadays what officers you feel comfortable with, you can talk to, you know, and what officers who just come off the cuff. I had an officer just walk up to my car one day. I was on the expressway. Just give you a brief synopsis.
Hold on, Candace.
On the
Wait. Before you go into that, let's go ahead and go into a break. Yeah, let's do a break, and then when we come back, I want to we'll let Candace finish her story, and then I got a couple of questions for you. I'm going to lay out a couple of scenarios, and I want you to tell me what can people do to avoid certain situations or how to handle certain pullovers and things like that. Truth Brothers Radio.
Absolutely.
Truth Brothers Radio.
This is Ray Gage of Truth Brothers Radio, taking this time to say thanks to everyone who's tuned into the show. We are on the rise, and we have you to thank for it. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to join our Facebook page, give us a review on iTunes, or drop us a line at wewanttruth@att.net. Also, don't forget to tell your friends about the show. Due to you spreading the word about the show, we are on our way to becoming the number one show on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks again for joining the True Brothers family. Peace. True Brothers Radio.
Something is wrong. Wrong with the government in which we live. Wrong with the leaders that lead us. Wrong with us in the way we respond to our enemy and each other. This nation is not about poor people. Whether they're black, brown, red, yellow, or white, this nation is about rich people and to hell with the weak and the poor. They must serve.
Truth Brothers, Truth Brothers Radio, and we're back. We're in the middle of our second hour we're talking to Officer Theo Brooks. And going back to my story, just really quick, I was on the expressway one day, and I was going northbound on the expressway. Police car was facing southbound on the expressway. This guy turned around, came and followed me. Come to find out, this has been the same officer that had been following me and randomly pulling me over for approximately 3 weeks, okay? Just for random stupid stuff. Now, nothing major. One day, my turn signal went out, so he pulled me over for that. Then said, well, your windshield wiper doesn't appear to be working properly. Really? I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't a big deal. You know, so it was a lot of frivolous stuff. Anyway, so he told me, he pulled me over, and then he came up to my car and just attempted to open my door. Didn't say anything to me. He just went and grabbed for my door. And I said, wait a minute, what are you doing? He said, I need you to step out of the car. I said, wait, what? And he's reaching in my window. He's reaching in my window now trying to open my door. What are you doing? You know, so it was a very frightening experience for me. And so finally, you know, after I got agitated enough, he stopped and started walking backwards toward the back of my car. And he put his hand out as if he were pointing to my taillight. And, you know, I'm thinking that maybe my taillight is busted or something happened. So not knowing, I got out of the car, and he arrested me. Now, he claims he arrested me because I didn't have insurance, this, that, or the other. But he had no words for me, anything of the sort. I mean, it was later on cleared up. But the way he treated me was just absolutely ridiculous. And,
was
you know,
it a white officer?
Correct. Yes, it was. Didn't say a word to me. Like I said, kind of inadvertently stalked me for weeks. You know, so,
and,
I mean, he starts
same
my
time
car,
every day he was there?
Say again?
Same time
yes.
every day he was at the
more
same location.
Right. I worked in a particular area, you know, so I would come through his area all the time. It was the same village.
You know, one, what I would have done, Candace, was that
a complaint was made.
Oh, it was made? What was the outcome? Did you know that they send you a letter to tell you?
No. No, they did not.
But it did stop after the complaint was made.
It did.
Okay. You did the right thing. Probably what should have, you know, if you did it like maybe one more before that one ticket was done and to inconvenience your life. One thing, too, I want women was he in a marked car? I meant to ask that. Was his vehicle marked or was it unmarked?
No, he was in a regular squad car.
Okay. One point I do want to make with women, very please, especially guys, too, when you're out of an area you don't know, always be careful of unmarked cars. Always. In fact, there was in the south suburbs, there was a period of people being pulled over by people be, impersonating the police officer now that all these, the cycle of all these Crown Vics and Caprices mm-hmm. are no longer in service and they're being resold on the regular market, you know, you have to be careful for that. In fact, I just came back from Mississippi where they were having a string of them, and these guys were pulling the women out the car and raping them along the side of the highway. So that's one thing. Please be careful of that. Number two, whenever you encounter someone, an officer of that who's acting of that nature, that he just persistent about pulling you over, always have your license and proof of insurance ready. Always be polite. Let him explain why he's pulling you over. You don't have, you shouldn't have to do no talking. If he asks a question, tell him you did not know. I'm telling you what to say. You did not know. He cannot get angry if you did not know. If you were speeding, I'm sorry, I did not. I swear I didn't know I was going that fast. Also, I was just listening to the music, and I was on my way home because I worked all day. Whatever it is, if he had enough common sense to know that, hey, even he does it when he goes home, he's not paying attention, he's just driving. How many times we look down, and that's why I never wrote anybody under 15 miles per hour. You have to be doing 15 miles and over for Officer Brooks to write you a ticket, period. I don't care, side street, expressway, whatever. But nonetheless, you give him the information. He has nothing. He has no other reason to do it. Now, say if he pulls you over a second time, your flag should go up, because if he lets you go with a warning the first time, or if he's writing, if he wrote you a ticket the first time, understand that you have two more strikes in the state of Illinois in a 12-month period before your license expires. I mean, before your license is suspended. So if he pulls you over a second time, you make sure you did everything right the first time mm-hmm. and the second time, and then go file that complaint. No, lightness should not strike twice with people. There are some who do have a heavy foot. There are some who go through the I've caught some people speeding twice, and usually on that second time, I wrote you a ticket, because the first time you should have got a ticket, but I might let you slide because you did 15 over. But the second time, you're doing it on purpose, especially if I see, like, a radar detector in the window. Oh, you're trying to catch me, but you didn't know how to outsmart my radar. So my point is that after that second time, Candace, you file your complaint, because he's endangering your license, and he's actually harassing you by that second time. You know, you're not a game banger. You know, you're an everyday working person. You're not up and down the street blasting loud music or racing up and down the street every day. You're going to work. After that second time, you file that complaint, and 9 times out of 10, that investigation should be open on him. So he's not going to write you again. He better have a good reason if he writes you again. But if his buddy tries to do it, I'm just stretching this out. If his buddy tries to write you, then the conspiracy is definitely there, and I would get an attorney at that point, because it's a departmental thing now. What I want people to understand is that you have the right to come and go as you please. If you're not breaking the law, and in the state of Illinois, they ask you to have your seatbelt on when they pull you over, they ask you to have your license and your insurance. You're not mandated to give nothing else. Make sure your front seat passenger has a seatbelt on, because he can get a citation too. But make sure that that's in order. If those things are in order, fine. If your taillight was out, he should have told you your taillight was out without you getting out of that car.
He did not say one word to me except get out of the car, and that was after he attempted to open my door. Luckily, I lock my doors when I get inside of my car.
Right.
So he couldn't just get in. But then he was reaching in my window. I'm like, what the hell are you doing?
He was out of line.
It terrified me. It terrified me. He treated me like I was a criminal. He searched my car. He handcuffed me. He made me watch him do it. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was way out of line. And actually, Candace, there are officers out there like that. And believe me, you may catch part of it, but there's nothing worse when a guy like that is your sergeant. And, you know, you're in the office and he tells you, you stop a guy for this, and you didn't write him else for this, Theo? No, because it's not discretion. I don't know about that. You know, that's not right. You know, you're not supposed to. You say to yourself, look, I'm the police. You mean to tell me I cannot write what the hell I want to write to a citizen that may break the law? You know, when I stop you, if you don't have your seatbelt on, it's my choice not to write you for no seatbelt. It's my choice if I want to let you go on if you did nothing wrong. I'm going to tell you, too, so far, that's why, Candace, there's not many like me behind, and I noticed that a lot of my buddies are now becoming lieutenants and commanders and chiefs, but there are very few of us behind because I've a guy like that who may be a sergeant may pull you over and say, write that lady a ticket. And I'll say, for what? Well, she didn't ever tell, like, you know, she should go to jail. Well, then you do it.
Really?
What?
I tell him, you
really?
Do it. And if he doesn't do it, what I'll do is I'll wait till he pull off and I'll say, Candace, have a nice day. Just get your tail light fixed when you come through again. And I'll take the butt of it because, you know, it's sometimes scary. It's scary like that. You know,
It really is. Because seriously,
and
who are they serving and protecting?
Right.
I don't feel like it's me. I do not feel like it's me.
Right.
You know, and I hate to say that, you know, and I'm not saying that for all officers. I'm really not. There are you. There are some others that's on your team. And, you know, just random officers that I've known, you know, who are truly good guys and represent being a police officer well. But nowadays it's just too hard to decipher. It really is.
I think they went wrong. I'm not trying to be funny about education, but when they start, when the one Chicago chief, Terry, I can't think of his last name, but when they decide to go 2 years college because it would help, it would help them in, I guess, decisions that they make on the street and so forth, this whole police game is not about college. I mean, you get your lesson right out there on the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you need to know how to use the computer in your car? Yes. Do you know, you know, I'm not trying to be funny. There's some officers, I'm hoping that maybe they so much under stress that, you know, I'm walking in a patrol room and one guy says, Brooks, how you spell the? I said, you
there
serious?
You
know.
Mm. Hey,
really?
Check it out. Nisha Williams got a question. She wants to know that do black officers have to watch their back from the people on the street and for racist cops?
Nikisha, I will say
Nisha.
Nisha, okay. Nisha, I would say that there may be some departments where, yeah, if you have a black officer that's working in a majority white town or where there's majority white officers. I don't want to put some departments out there like this, but there are some in the South suburbs where, you know, it's all black town, but they have all white officers and have few blacks. And, yeah, I've heard black officers make those statements.
Yeah.
You have to. That's when you're code blue or that blue line that you were talking about. That's when you really worry about it the most. I'm trying to think of the movie with Ice Cube. Way back.
From the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of sort of like that. You know, you get in that good old boy network. Oh my God.
We got a caller coming in, so let's get with this caller. 508, you're on with the Truth Brothers. What's your name?
Hey, family, this is Brother Justice. That's Glass Shield. He's talking about the movie from Ice Cube back
then. There you go.
Yeah,
hey, Justice.
He's good.
What's good from your family? I've been away for a little bit, but still trying to tune in when I can. And another great show. Definitely another great show. The brothers throwing a lot of informative information. You know, that. There's so much opposition out there for brothers like this. And to come out there and have this, this venue to be able to, you know, get people to give, you know, a real perspective of what's happening, what's, you know, expected of someone out here like a brother. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I have a brother over here in Massachusetts with the state trooper, and he feels a lot of adversity. As the brother was saying, you know, there's so much opposition between, you know, the races and your own kind coming at you, you know, with these certain expectations of, you know, needing favors and things of that nature. But just being able to, you know, uphold your, you know, your obligation as a, you know, law, you know, officer, and doing what's right is, you know, it's a great thing. Appreciate
right.
The brother.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Thank you very much, brother. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question real quick. When people are pulled over by the cops. Matter of fact, let me lay out a scenario that happened to me about 4 years ago. I'm working out in Cicero doing a job detail, and I had to go through Berwyn to get home. Now I'm going through one of the side streets, making my way over to the expressway, and it was a nice September day. School had just started back up, and there was this little grammar school that was letting out. They had a police officer out there directing traffic so that the buses could get in and out, pick up the kids, and go to, and let traffic move on at the same time. Again, it was a nice summer day. It's about 80 degrees. I got the windows down, moon roof open, and I'm playing jazz in my Infiniti. Not even bumping hip hop. I'm playing jazz. And as the traffic was inching through, the police officer, he sees me in the car, and he starts staring at me. Now, I'm not saying anything. And all of a sudden, he comes out, turn that down. This is a factory system. Again, this is Coltrane playing.
Right.
So I look at him, and he say, do you hear me talking to you? Turn that down. I don't say anything. And I turn the radio down. Now, this is what ticked him off. For some reason, he got mad because I didn't say anything. I'm just looking at him. And the music went down, but he didn't see my hands leave the steering wheel. And I guess that irked him. So he looks at me like, oh, you think you funny, huh? Huh, do you want to go to jail? I didn't say a word. I'm not saying anything to this guy. And he's getting mad because I won't respond. He wants me to banter with him, and I'm not going to do that. And he's, well, look here, do you want to go to jail? Because I can take that car. Do you want me to take that car? Dude, I'm just looking at him. Just looking at him. Just waiting. Because I'm like, if you're going to, you want me out this car, you're going to pull me out this car in front of this grammar school, in front of all these people, and I'm not going to say a word because they're not going to say that I was sitting here arguing with you for any way, shape, or form. So he looked at me and say, why won't you talk? I say, I do have the right to remain silent. That's the only thing I said. I do have the right to remain silent.
Right.
Then he
right.
told me, get the fuck on. Get the fuck on. Okay, no problem. But he was looking. He was pushing for a confrontation.
Yeah.
And I would like for you to tell people out there how to handle stops when you dealing with an aggressive officer. I always learned that when you're dealing with anybody aggressive, if you take the opposite task, that will calm the situation down.
It does. It does. And you know what makes me mad? And I'm going to tell you, you would have beat that ticket anyway. Because at one point, I don't know if it was that white officers did not understand what it meant by loud music, but we had a summer where loud music was just out of control, and you know they had gave an order down and had passed an ordinance to tow vehicles and cite them $200 tickets for loud music, but the statute says amplified loud music, not music from the factory radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Amplified loud music. He can, and you were allowed, your music can be played as loud as you want to in your car. See, that's where he was wrong. That's where he was dead wrong when he told you to turn your music down because your music was not amplified. You just so happen to have a sunroof and he can hear. And that's not against the law. It's not disturbing anybody's peace. You're not disturbing. To disturb somebody's peace from that music, number one, for that ordinance, that means I'm in my bed and I may have work midnight. I'm waking up and because somebody just rolled past my house and rattled the hell out of my furniture in the front.
Right.
That's loud music.
Right, which in the 90s was becoming a problem because people had amplified music and then they were playing it at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And
right.
That's when all of those ordinances start coming down.
Thank you. Thank you. And that's when he would have had the right to say something. But he didn't have the right to say something to you. You were driving on your way, minding your business with a factory radio. So in that perspective, he was dead wrong. He doesn't even fit. It didn't fit the citation if he had took your car or anything. He was looking. You're right. He was looking for a confrontation.
He was looking for a confrontation.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you were black and you were having a good day.
Yeah.
You know. And
yep.
I hate to say it, but sometimes it's like that. Some people are so miserable, Ray, in their lives that that's how in the hell they act with that badge.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, we got another caller on the line, too. Let's get to him real quick. 773, you're on with the Truth Brothers. What's your name?
Excellent.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
All right. What you got to say?
Well, I had an incident a few years ago before I moved back to Chicago. I came up to visit my mom, and in the state of Michigan, you're only required to have a badge plate. And because I didn't have a front plate, they issued me 3 tickets.
Mm.
So I had to come back to Chicago to go to court to have the judge throw all of that stuff out. That was a waste of time and trip.
Mm.
And every time I came to Chicago, I always had an issue because I only had a back plate on my car.
Antoinette, when you had the plate, was the plate that you had on your car a Michigan plate?
Yes, it was.
And they turn around and try to write you for not having. Well, let me let you know first of all, sweetheart, you're right. If that vehicle came back registered to Michigan, that meant that you are in compliance with Michigan laws. That ticket should not have been written. So, you know, that was problem number one. You said every time you come back, they try to write the same ticket?
Every time I came back for about 6 months, they tried to write a ticket because I didn't have a front plate.
Okay. The next time something like that happens, dear, you file a complaint with that department. Is it the same officer or is it different officers?
Different officers.
Okay.
But it was like on the west side of Chicago. In almost any place I went on the west side.
Okay.
I had
to laugh at that one. Yeah. Anytime you, I mean, in my personal experience, I don't want to interfere, but in my personal experience, that seems to be one of the worst areas when it comes to law enforcement or with the way they handle their situation is on the west side of Chicago. One of the worst places.
Yeah. And now, it's not one of the suburbs. It is Chicago Police that's doing this?
Chicago Police. 11th District, 15th District, those areas.
Right. You know, what I would do is you're getting, now is it a parking ticket or a moving violation?
It was, two of them was moving violations. One was a parking ticket.
Right. You know what? When next time the officer approach you, or if you have that happen, and he says you're supposed to have a front, you politely say, you know, officer, you know, I am from Michigan. I have Michigan plates. And you are not to be in compliance with the Illinois law. You are allowed to have be, a one plate on the back because you're not from the state of Illinois. If that officer is to write you a citation, it is time to file a complaint. I want people to understand that when something happens to you more than once, that is not, to me, it's almost like lightning trying to strike twice in the same place. It doesn't happen. A lot of times,
I explained to him the very first time that they issued me the ticket that I didn't. Michigan doesn't require you to have a front plate. Because when you go to the Secretary of State in Michigan to register your vehicle, they just give you one plate with a tag on it. That's it. They don't give
right.
you two tickets like in Illinois.
Right, and that shouldn't even be strange to Chicago police because that's the same applies in Indiana. You only need one plate in Indiana, and Chicago should be very familiar with people from Indiana.
Right, right. And one thing I want, reason why I say that I know some people hate to do it, but sometimes when officers do that, sometimes you have to file that complaint because what you don't know is that some officers are one strike away from being fired. We have have your rights. I mean, trust me, I have seen officers that are one write-up away from being fired. The chief, the deputy chief, the investigator, they're tired of some of these officers. You will be surprised how many Chicago police officers are fired. I personally know about that. And, it's 1,300 officers. They will always replace one. And if that officer or officers who may be targeting your car, because remember, they all talk to each other. They all eat. They all
right.
have coffee, especially if the district is right there on top of each other. They all associate with each other. They drink with each other at the bar. It may have been a simple conversation as, man, I pulled over this car with this chick in it, man, from Michigan. I believe that's so-and-so boy, girlfriend, or, man, I'm going to get him, man, because I seen her up by his house, or however the conversation go, all they need to do is remember Michigan plate on the back, the description or color of your vehicle, and that officer, he would honestly feel he's doing the right thing. And, I'm not trying to go bad against, my fellow officers, but some officers just, I can do without them. I prefer to ride a one-man unit than work with some officers.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
Nisha is asking, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Nisha is asking, stating that that's interesting, but what do you do for veteran cop who receives numerous complaints?
Actually, a veteran cop who received numerous complaints, usually the progressive punishment has already started. What some people don't know is that usually, from my knowledge, when it comes to suspensions, they start with that written reprimand. If the commander says, this veteran officer, he hasn't done anything or hasn't had a complaint in over a year. Because remember, veteran officers are smart. They don't want too many complaints to come in on them. That one complaint turns from verbal to written. After that written, it becomes 1 day. The next one becomes a 3 day. And then the maximum is the 5 day in which that officer ends up before the police and fire commission. And that's when he can end up being terminated. So you have to just stay behind them.
Man, still a lot of information. There's still a lot of stuff we didn't cover. I got a feeling we're going to have to do a part 3 in the future of this thing, man. Seriously.
Yeah.
Way more people come in and ask more questions this week. I guess something happened between last week and this week to get some response out of you.
Well, once again,
it's relevant, and it's great information. It's information we need to know. I know I've been educated tonight, and I thank you for that.
Problem.
We definitely have to do that. We definitely have to do this again.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're definitely going to have you back, man. Thank you for coming in 2 weeks in a row. And right now you're the all-time champ. Last week was our highest-rated episode for this year so far. So right now you're the holding champ, man.
Do I get the championship belt?
If you can hold it all year, yeah.
But I won't have no. I can't hold it like Hulk Hogan for a couple years, then, huh?
We'll see, man, because we definitely going to have you back, man. So thanks a lot, man. You are one of the wonderful guests, and you're definitely a fan favorite, man.
No doubt.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Ray, Candace, and Devon. I love you guys. And everyone out there, just remember, you know, be patient. You don't have to argue with an officer. Just, you know, remember, you have more control than he does. If he's going to give the ticket, it doesn't mean that you're guilty of it. That's just him in the beginning of the process.
All right.
In that order.
All right, man. And thanks a lot, guys. This has been another great show, man. We've done it again, man. This was a great show. Thank you, guys. And we will jump back into another topic next week.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm ready.
All right.
It's been real.
All right. So we're going to sign off, and we're going to leave you like this. If you're not listening to the Truth Brothers,
then the truth ain't in you.
Peace.
Two fingers out.
Peace.